You're listening to the TrekMate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector levels.
Crusher, Carteno, Gleason, report to the Battle Bridge.
Mr. Data, Mr. Worf, I have a special mission for you.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the Battle Bridge.
You're listening to the Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything, almost, about Star Trek The Next Generation. I'm Lou from Nebraska, where there's lots of guns.
I'm James from London,
where there's no guns.
And I'm Sean from Canada, where we carry sharp sticks.
All right. Yes. So in America, we were discussing before we started the show, in America, a good drive-by shooting could have 30 or 40 shots fired, whereas over in the UK, a drive-by would be telling somebody to F off, mate, while he says, no, you F off, mate, and at least they're polite about it. So, tonight's episode is Parallels, right?
It is, that's right.
Do we have any parallels to this show?
No.
Okay.
The Battle Bridge is unparalleled.
Yes, it is. Oh. Probably one of the worst podcasts you'll ever hear. Way down the line. So, Sean, how have you been, buddy?
How do I answer that? When was the last time I was here?
Oh, you know something? I'm usually armed with that figure, but this time...
Yeah, he has this data, so you shouldn't have asked that.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm fine. Everything's great. Everything's wonderful. No need to find out when I was here last.
Oh, okay. Then I won't say...
I just stumbled across an article online searching for you guys, Canadians, which is top 10 reasons why Canada's such a... Top 10 reasons why Canada is the best country in the world.
Maple syrup?
And apparently, number one on that is poutine? Is that a thing?
Yeah, that is French fries smothered in gravy and cheese curds.
Oh, for the love of God.
Wow. I am going to have to come over to Canada.
Yeah,
you are. I was not expecting that.
So basically, he avoids the stomach altogether, goes straight to the arteries.
Yeah, but it's delicious.
It sounds like it.
Okay, and just one thing, because sometimes we have a bit of a Commonwealth connection, Sean. When we say gravy, what do we mean? Do we mean proper gravy, like as in gravy?
It's dark. It's usually the remnants of whatever you've cooked your carcass in, I think. Sure. I don't know. I've never made gravy, but it's dark brown, and it's piping hot, and it enhances the flavors of the fries.
Well, mashed potatoes and gravy, yeah.
Do you have gravy?
Yeah, we put it on our mashed potatoes.
Okay. I always assumed that Americans didn't do gravy.
Oh, sure.
I will report for cognitive bias training next week.
Okay. Maybe someday we'll have gravy together. All right, Sean. So while you guys were talking, I looked it up. You were last on for The Chase.
When was that?
Last year.
Shoot, 3 years ago. Who knows?
1976.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in that case, if it's been that long, did I talk about the third podcast that I recently started?
No, this is new.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
I'm gonna look this one
okay.
up.
All right. Well, you guys all know about the Geekly Weekly Rusted Robot Podcast. Then you know about Soul Forge, where we talk about life, living, and stupid things we do for love. And then, James, get this. You know Dan and Paul, right? Paul Wright and Dan Hitch?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I have met Paul, and I am aware of Dan. I don't think I've met Dan.
Well, The three of us, back in June of last year, started up the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. And if people are not checking that out, they need to, because it is a delicious slice of life that comes out every second Wednesday.
Wow. And what's that's the reference on the Cosmic ain't it?
It is Lou. What's the reference on the Cosmic Pizza?
Well, we were trying to come up with something that sounded like all-encompassing. We were going to do the sci-fi pizza podcast, and then I said, well, Cosmic is even better because it could be more than just sci-fi. It's everything. It's all about the universe. So we decided to call it Cosmic Pizza, and the deal is that we pretend we're a pizza shop, and we're bringing you your order of whatever that episode is that week.
And it's pepperoni, too. Yeah, baby. That sounds very interesting. I will have to look at that. Extra topping episode 5, Superman.
That was me. Yes, we recently started a about a 10-minute every second week episode of Extra Toppings, where it's not the regular hour-long show. It's just like 10 minutes on one specific topic hosted by just one of us, just to tide our listeners over until the main meal the next week.
Okay, sure. I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I'm going to claim that you're not the guy filling in the comments or the debunk that's attached to these podcasts, because there's too many British-isms in this. Unless, of course, you guys have no Canadian TV and you're getting all of our stuff. I don't know if that's the case.
No. The way it works is I'm one of the co-hosts. Paul does all the editing and Dan does all the social media, because I already have enough on my plate with the other two podcasts. So yeah, I just talk on this show. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And we take turns hosting every week.
Okay.
Looks good. I'm going to check that guy out.
Yeah.
Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Yes. Currently
rated 5 out of 5 on iTunes. At least on the iTunes that I can see.
Nice. Oh, jeez. Gee, where are we at in there? Don't ask. Don't tell. Don't ask. Don't tell. Okay. This is fast. Okay. This is really interesting. Yeah. And the Soul Forge. Yeah. I've been. Okay. We're kind of looking.
You were supposed to come on the Soul Forge, Lou. You were supposed to be a guest one time. But I never heard from you again.
Yeah, because I'm...
You just heard from it now.
I'm a very forgetful person, so I definitely... I've got that written down. How do you determine for the Soul Forge, how do you determine what topic? Is it just the guest brings a topic and you all discuss it, or do you just talk about what happened to us this week?
Well, you know what? It's totally fly by the seat of my pants kind of a show, because this week's episode that just came out was called Childhood Celebrity Crushes. So I was talking about people that I was in love with when I was a kid watching them on TV, because on the previous week's Rusted Robot podcast, I was talking about the Wonder Years being rebooted and how on the original show, my biggest crush of all time was Winnie Cooper from the Wonder Years. I got a comment from a listener who said, everybody's crush was Winnie. And then I thought to myself, I need more people other than me to talk about this. So I got voice clips from people at work, from people from the internet. And I built this great big show, episode 195 of Soul Forge podcast, Childhood Celebrity Crushes. It's amazing. Everybody needs to check it out.
Yes. You know what it reminds me of is, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it was the Road of I and We. It was hosted by Benjamin Straw and Byer Brown. They just got together and they just, you know, talked about whatever was on the mind at the time. It was a pretty good podcast, but it pod faded out and I miss it a lot. But that's why I'm thinking that's a pretty cool concept. And yeah,
it is super cool, and yes, and Soul Forge will be having its 4th anniversary at the end of July. So
there okay. you go. Since I'm back and to driving, I can, you know, listen to podcasts. So
cool.
So Sean, I would invite myself onto Soul Forge, but it's not really going to work, right? These episodes are coming in at 30 minutes or so, and I'm not entirely sure that you can get anything out of me that will last less than like an hour and a half.
Oh, could be a multi-arc episode.
Oh yeah, that's all you need.
Or he can edit you down too.
Have me on for 2 hours.
I've had that happen to me. Edit down, yeah, edit down. I've had that happen. It was, well, I'm not even going to mention what it was, but went onto the show, talked about something, and then when I replayed it, it's like 60-70% of everything I said hit the cutting room floor. Oh, was I pissed? But anyway, that's a different story. Okay, then. Let's talk about parallels.
Yeah, Parallels.
This is the 11th, huh?
Come on, yeah, keep going, keep on. You haven't done that bit.
Oh, good, yeah. This is the 11th episode of Season 7. First aired on November 29th, 1983. This was written by the amazing and talented Brannon Braga and directed by Robert Wiemer. Guest starring for this episode, Mark Bramhall as Gal Nador, and Majel Barrett as the computer voice. However, we have Patty Yasutake as Alyssa Ogawa, and amazingly, I completely forgot this one, special appearance by Will Wheaton as Wesley Crusher.
Yeah, I totally
forgot him. Now, as I'm talking, I want to find out who the Cardassian con officer was. Oh, here we go. Kevin Grover is a Cardassian helmsman. Spoiler alert for this episode, by the way. And I thought he looked like one of the Cardassians on DS9. He may have been a Cardassian. Yeah, he was on the Defiant and Tribunal. Interesting.
Oh,
plus he was in.
That's a good spot then, because yeah. I was just about to call you crazy.
He's also the ancient sky spirit for Voyager's tattoo. Fascinating.
I have no recollection of that episode.
Akuchimoya. They land on the planet where he's Chakotay sees his symbol, Native American symbol, on the ground. Yeah, and he realizes the sky spirits from Earth. We'll get there.
What we call a throwaway episode that nobody cares about.
I liked it! You know,
you're allowed to like it. It's just not good.
Hey, the hawk almost takes out Neelix's eye. You're going to tell me that's not a good thing?
They should be able to replicate eyes in the future, though.
Well, that's true.
But maybe not Talaxian eyes, so who knows?
Yes. All right. Well, I mean, if he was able to stay in sickbay with his holographic lungs, it's a different story. Okay. So what do we think about, briefly, this episode? Oh, parallels that I'm talking about. What about you, Sean? How are you feeling about it?
Should I give it away right at the beginning of the episode?
You know something? I don't know about James, but I love this episode, so they're going to figure out that we like it. So you go first.
Okay, simple. It's my favorite Star Trek episode of all time, ever.
Mm. Yesterday's Enterprise?
That's good, too.
It beats Yesterday's Enterprise?
It beats everything. That's what favorite means.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. That's telling me something. What about you, Doc?
Okay, so...
Oh, here we go. Whenever he does... Okay, so... I'll shut up now.
Okay, can I give a plug to... I mean, that clearly not competition, but there is this YouTube channel that I find, relatively entertaining, which is Red Letter Media. And they are famous for, and they broke out a number of years ago, for doing basically like a 90-minute review of the Star Wars prequels. So this is what they're famous for. There's a fair amount of like additional humor on top of just like a standard review. But if people haven't seen the reviews of the prequels, and then they also did the TNG movies. They did Star Trek 09 and Into Darkness and Beyond, I think. Anyway, they're Star Trek fans. And a couple of months ago, they did like a top 5 Star Trek episodes, and then they've done subsequent follow-ups to those, where they're basically just two guys chatting about the episode. And they spoke about all the stuff they thought was good, and they chatted about all the stuff they thought was bad. And I think the most recent Star Trek-related content they have was basically them reviewing the first season of TNG. And, you know, these guys are in no illusions. They're clearly aware that it's a pretty horrendous season. But there's also good in there, and they appreciate that. Anyway, you know, I like the guys. They're very good. In something that I was watching them on, they mentioned parallels, and they mentioned it as being nonsense. And they said, look, it's nearly good, but it's nonsense. And when I watched the episode coming into this review, because previously my standing position on parallels is that it's great. And then they kind of said, look, it doesn't make sense, and it's a bit convoluted, and it's just nonsense. And I kind of watched that with their shadow in my mind. And I watched it today with the shadow, and I have come to the conclusion that it is nonsense, but it's wonderful. And I have no problem still loving this episode, despite it being, you know, especially I was looking at the way they solve it all at the end with an infinite number of Enterprises there. And, hey, does anyone have the following quantum signature, and then go back and everything will be sorted? It's nonsense, but it's great. And I like it.
Yes.
And I really do like it a lot.
I'm sure we'll talk about that near the end. But it's nonsense. It doesn't hold up science wise, but that doesn't matter. It's giving you the concept of alternate dimensions, and my 17-year-old brain at the time was blown right apart.
And what it is as well, right? It is it allows you, you know, there's a little device under which you can you put together like an interesting story, which is really why is this happening, what's going on. At the same time as you open up the possibilities of, you know, what could have been and what might have been in different realities. And you see a lot of cool stuff, right? You see a lot of, everyone wanted to know what would Data look like if he had blue eyes. Everyone would want to have seen that. You know, we see here a Worf as commander in red for the first time since season one. You know, we see all of these alternative realities, and it's a, there's a lot of fan service here, I think. I mean, I don't know if I can describe Geordi being dead on in sick bay as fan service, but there's a lot of these kind of these scenes, and I think it's wonderful. And eventually, I'm going to have a tangent on this because I went to Star Trek London, and I got Brannon Braga, who is the guy that wrote this episode, to autograph something of mine. And the thing that I got him to autograph was indeed, you know, a part of a book that happened to reference Parallels, because he obviously wrote this episode, and he wrote a nice message, and I've always liked the imagery on this episode, and I think it's great.
Oh yeah. Like you said, the word you used was convoluted. This is very convoluted. Another thing is it's so subtle on the changes that, you know, I've never noticed a lot of the changes in this episode that occur in alternate realities that are occurring at the second on the fly. I didn't notice Geordi and Data switching sides. I didn't notice that the little loincloth that goes over Geordi when he's in sick bay actually gets smaller. After,
of course, you noticed, Lou. You noticed that on first watch.
I didn't notice LeVar Burton's ass sticking out more on the second time they showed him than the first time. I wasn't aware of that.
I did notice that. I always remember that being a change. But when I was watching it just now, I was thinking, hang on, did I imagine that, or was that a proper change? And I resisted the temptation to rewind the scene just to check whether or not they actually made it skimpier, which I think deserves praise.
Well, I'm glad you made it through it, because I couldn't resist it. I had to go back. In fact, I even went back to the beginning a couple times And what I mean by that is when something – he talks about something that changed, like when he went to his log that said he was now in ninth place.
Yep.
On the first time around, he said several contestants were maimed. on that alternate log, he said several contenders. Now, so the difference between contestants and contenders, was that deliberate? Or sometimes writing gets sloppy, and when they do things like cause and effect we talked about, each time through the loop, they said something, one or two words were different, one or two inflections were different, which I thought at the time was weird that they would be.
Oh, it's a different person.
Yeah, sometimes they are, completely.
But the thing is, I actually think that the script in this episode, and maybe you can prove me wrong with facts, who knows, but I get the impression that this is very tight and it's very deliberate. Mm-hmm. So, it would not be surprising to me if everything was as expected. Even down to the fact, right, that in one of the logs he's the winner and in the other log he's not the winner. And that might have had an effect on how, he might want it phrased, the other people taking part. So to me, I think this is such a tight episode in all of the stuff that it does. I know that there's a little bit of the thing at the end, which is, well, why doesn't he get a surprise party at the end when he got a surprise party at the beginning? But that's clearly intentional, even if you might to explain it.
Because when he came through the fissure the first time, that was already a different reality.
Ah, yeah. That could very, very well have been, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I noted
slightly
that.
Slightly different, yeah.
Yeah, I noted that. Why didn't they throw a party for him like they did the first time? And then I realized exactly what you said. As soon as he hit that fissure, something changed. We just didn't see him do the pass out thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, have a nap. I think the episode's writing is very, very tight. So I think everything that is happening, is likely to have been, absolutely what the writer wanted. One question I do have, by the way, is that, clearly they start putting in these differences, right? So, let's have the painted here instead of there. Let's have a Troy dressed like this rather than that. And, no doubt they were looking for suggestions of things, what to change. Now, who the hell did come up with the idea that what would be good to throw the audience is that we should have the change where Ogawa leaves and Crusher comes in. It's like, okay, fine. And you're in a red uniform instead of a yellow uniform, just to make it clear that something's different. Okay, sure. And now we should be able to tell whether Geordi's circumcised or not. I mean, who thought that was a good change to put in? What kind of meetings happened in the background to ensure that that happened?
Question for you, Doc. How are you able to determine that? Because I don't recall seeing his junk anywhere in there. Just the loincloth.
It was pretty. I mean, do you not have access to that HD version?
No, I don't think I do, but are you saying Geordi was more endowed in the HD version than he is in the regular one?
It just seemed like a very odd change, right? To have you've already got many obvious changes and you think, yeah, this will play with them. let's change Geordi's dressing.
Well, maybe that's why the loincloth just appeared smaller, because it was covering more. Yeah, can you imagine that in the script? I don't even want to describe what the script would say, but it'd be funny. Okay, but yes, so many subtle changes. It's amazing, and each time he went through this thing, I tried to look for everything that was different. And the only thing that I noticed that wasn't different in one way was his surprise party. Because he cuts out the chocolate cake, and then we go to, we flash all the people admiring Data's painting, and as soon as the cake comes, it's yellow. And I thought, I actually replayed that, thinking maybe somebody did a quick switcheroo, and somebody who was looking that way was all of a sudden looking that way, or a different person ended up in the shot. I think it would have been impressive if they were to accomplish that, and see if that gets past us. Somebody just, they turn their head, all we see is the back of their head as they're looking at something. And when they turn their head back and look at the camera, it's a whole different face. That would have been an amazing shot.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, I have to say, I love Geordi's reaction to the painting when he comes. It's some of the best stuff, right? By this point, you kind of like know the Worf character. You know that Geordi's winding him up, and you know what you clearly know deep down exactly what Worf is thinking about this thing that Data made for him. And the way that Geordi so casually just recognizes it, and you can clearly tell that he's winding him up is wonderful.
Mm-hmm. That was great. Oh, that's the painting of the Battle of What's-Its-Name, of course.
Yeah, yes. I remember that. Okay. So another thing is, how would a Klingon actually handle taking home a ninth place trophy? Wouldn't a Klingon smash that thing to pieces, or perhaps even kill the person who, lost him the battle? He used an illegal move, and all of a sudden now he's in ninth place. I can't imagine a Klingon living with it. That sounds very dishonorable. Why wouldn't he have killed him for that?
Well, we don't know exactly what's involved in that illegal Tikka maneuver. Yeah. So, there's lots involved that we don't know. So maybe it just totally laid him out. He couldn't retaliate. We don't know.
Okay. Well, in the beginning, he did win champion standing. I assume that's first place. And he's looking forward to resuming his duties. But he's not looking forward to an awkward situation. And, of course, you know what he's thinking. Those human bastards are going to plan a surprise party. And sure enough, they do. You guys, James, you said the writing on this was tight, and I agree with that completely, but I also think the acting was really, really well done. Even Worf's eyes, I don't think he could have rolled them any further back when he heard surprise. I mean, his reactions to a lot of these things were pretty spot on as well. And for the life of me, he doesn't seem like a jolly good fellow. But I assume that's what they were singing in Klingon.
Because they couldn't get the rights for Happy Birthday.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay, would you need the rights to Happy Birthday if you translated it into Klingon?
Probably, because the tune would be the same.
Yeah. As long as the cadence is the same, as long as the cadence is the same, as long as the cadence is the same, I better stop before I get sued.
Yeah, you better.
No.
Okay.
Anyway, you noticed I didn't do the birthday one because I don't want to get sued. But yes, it is copyrighted and you technically are supposed to pay royalty. But here's another thing. How many years before it's supposed to go into the public domain?
Well, I think it is now, but...
I think it's actually in the public domain in most countries. I don't think in the US it is yet.
Hmm.
Or it wasn't yet. I don't know the details, but you don't want to pay royalty rates for the next 40 years of syndication, right? So,
right. And that's why nobody sees my home videos. I don't want anybody finding them.
Is that why?
Oh, it's all over Happy Birthday, Okay.
Oh, no. Happy Birthday is in public domain now.
It is good.
I thought so.
As of like 2020, there was a court case in 2015.
Oh, really? There was an actual court case that short a time ago? Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think they did own the song, but it's there's like a 75. I think it's like 75 years after the death of the author. Entered public domain actually in the EU in 2017.
Well, that was more recent than I would have thought. Okay,
cool. Yeah, but this was made in 93, even though it takes place in 23 something. So
is it not made in the 24th century? What
the historical documents? Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Oh, I don't think they should do it anyway. I don't know where that came from. So, Worf. Clearly, do you guys really believe he's a jolly good fellow? And there isn't one person that could deny?
I bet his son could deny.
Yeah,
but his son wasn't since there. He's conveniently on Earth visiting Worf's parents, so we'll never know.
Mm. But I do like his present, don't you? I mean, yes. You figure from your kid, ridges, his cranial ridges. That was a damn good present. That was so cute.
Mm-hmm. I want one to make a great ashtray.
I think this is a stupid present. Why is this a present?
It's the same reason I got my daughter's footprints on their little birth card that came from the hospital. Come on. You know, something from your kids like that, that years and years and years when they're an adult and away from you, is a pretty special thing.
I don't know. I mean, when he's sitting there kind of, look, he's, well, my boy's all grown up now, you know, look at this, you know, this, his cranial ridges. I kind of thought, I mean, really, is this what Klingons give around? It just didn't seem...
No, when you put it that way, you're right.
It'll be turned into an ashtray within seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. How many Klingon commissaries and gift shops have you been to? Clearly not enough, because of all the ones that I have gone to, the place is lousy with Hedridge cast busts. Just, they're everywhere.
No way. No,
collect them all.
Collect them all, yeah. We have Gowron's Hedridges from when he was 10.
10, 15, 35, and 72. So, yeah.
That's good. Okay.
Also, I mean, the Klingons have been through a period where they didn't have Hedridges, right? So
we don't talk about that.
If there's this tradition of doing the Hedridges, and then half of them are like, you know, half of them are smooth Hedridges, it's going to bring dishonor to the family.
Well, it went out of fashion for about 100 years, and then it came back again.
And instead, what they started giving their family like their first fully grown Fu Manchu. Also, hang on. One thing I do think though here is that clearly, if Worf is buying Riker when he says, "Oh, I hate surprise parties," that guy's not very smart. I mean, do we really think that Riker's a guy that doesn't like surprise parties?
I hate surprise parties.
How gullible is he?
Yeah, very, actually. Couple things. Yeah, you make perfect... Actually, when you think about it, I guess Klingon parents aren't going to be proud of their kids' head ridges. More like how many warriors they've killed would be the best thing. And secondly, on a tangent, I hated in Trials and Tribulations, we do not talk about with outsiders. I thought, what a cheap cop-out that is.
No, that was fantastic. That was the best way they could have done it.
Yeah.
And then Enterprise went and ruined it.
What are you going to say? Okay. The best thing about that is that at the time, I don't know whether it's just O'Brien and Bashir or if it's Odo, O'Brien and Bashir, but they end up putting in a whole load of the speculations right from the fans. It's like they mention, well, what was it? Like some type of genetic mutation, you know, different subspecies? And they give you all of the like the fan favorite theories, and then Worf just dismisses them. And it's as good as the how do the Heisenberg compensators work? Very well, thank you. It's it's the perfect response to that kind of question. Because we all know why. And you know, crystallizing it is in canon, it is just not necessary.
Well, obviously they had enough backlash that they had to put it in the script in Enterprise, and I like the way Phlox handled that situation too, describing all that. That was very good, I think. I don't know, you want to know. They've been asking since the motionless picture, why do they look so different than in the series? And you know, to hear, well, we don't talk about with outsiders. I don't know. It just felt like they didn't know what to say about it, and they just copped out.
Yeah, but there's nothing you can say, right? You know, what are you going to have? Worf turn to camera and say, "I'm afraid we're a TV show, and the budget in the '60s didn't stretch to prosthetics." I mean, you know, that is that what you want?
That's a Boston Worf legal thing. Wall. Yeah. Yes, that's a Boston legal thing there. Okay. So we're at the Argus Array again. And this time, there's no water heater probe, is there? Oh, wait. What did I mean by that? You know, from the nth degree, the Cythereans created this probe that looks like a American water heater.
I like the fact, by the way, that they keep coming back here. It gives the universe a kind of a lived-in quantity.
Yeah. Except for in one of the realities, it was destroyed. Another thing, we didn't get any. We did not get. We figured out what ship changed the array, but they didn't. They did show the four places that it was spying on, such as Outpost 47. Yeah, 47. Gotcha. But it didn't really go into why they were doing it. I guess just watching their ship productions.
It's a 42-minute episode. It doesn't matter why they're doing it. It's not part of the plot.
I've mentioned this on a couple of occasions. It really isn't integral to the plot. I mean, Kardashians are bad people.
Yeah.
Of course they're going to be. Of course they're going to be spying on us.
Okay. So you know, another interesting point is Worf just, you know, comes out of nowhere, meeting Deanna in 10-4 to ask if she could be Alexander's, you know, adopted parent should anything happen to him. Do you think it's these alternate reality jumps that's making him think of his own mortality or what? Where did that come from?
No, that came from the fact that he had to let her look after him while Worf was away, right? So I thought that this was like a natural evolution of just, you know, what was happening with Worf and Deanna in the standard universe. I didn't see this as in.
That's right.
Anything other than that.
It's showing the progression of their relationship over time, so that later on, when they're married, we're not surprised because they'd been slowly getting closer over time.
Okay. Well, I mean, at the time he asked that, he's already jumped universes a good three times, so yes. We don't know in the Prime universe whether it would have been true or not. But in any universe, the fact that that would have made her mother his stepmother is shocking enough. I mean, the horror on his face when she said that, it was awesome.
He's like, I quite like that. I thought that was it was something that clearly he hadn't thought of.
Right. Yeah.
But it's a risk he's willing to take.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, so basically I do my notes in the progression of the show. We have been jumping all over the place so much I'm not even sure where to even begin. So we might as well just go on and I'll skim it and look for anything we haven't talked about. But here's one. Why does the array have blinking lights? I mean, do you really think starships are going to bump into the thing because they don't know it's there?
If they're at sublight speeds.
So if they're at sublight speeds, they're not going to see a blinking light coming at them.
Why wouldn't they? Because they're going slow enough.
Oh.
What's wrong with having a blinking light?
Well, I mean, it's obvious why you need a blinking light on a tower so an airplane could see it, but in space? What are the odds of somebody slamming into the array?
Pretty good, actually.
Wow, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, that thing was huge.
It seemed like it had more width and length than it did height. But
it could also just be a diagnostic light, right? Stop nickpicking.
Okay.
It's really not an important feature of this episode.
No, I suppose not. And the Cardassian at Khan, well, you know, it's just, what are you going to do? I mean, what was it in, what's the name of that episode when Riker all of a sudden has his son, Jean-Luc?
Future Imperfect.
Yeah, Future Imperfect.
Who was the Khan then? Because he says, I can get used to the, Ferengi ensign. He can get used to the idea of a Ferengi ensign. Okay. So now we went from a Ferengi ensign to a Cardassian. Fascinating. Okay, so what do you think about? Okay, here again, I forgot Worf and Deanna were married in this episode, so this is obviously where the notion of them two getting together, because as we've talked about before, it seemed like in All Good Things, Deanna and Worf just came out of nowhere to me, and obviously now I get it.
Yeah, and it kind of parallels, if you'll pardon a phrase, Seven and Chakotay.
That's the one that's baffling to me, but Yeah. I wasn't expecting... Well, yeah, that was just ridiculous. But at least Deanna and Worf had a build-up to it. Seven and Chakotay just... But then again, I believe Beltran said he was phoning it in every week of the last couple of seasons. So, yeah, he didn't have much for it.
By the way, do people not like the Worf and Troy thing? Is it a problem?
I didn't.
It's not the best.
No, it made no sense.
Okay, but how obnoxious is it, right? Because in this episode, what it's used for, it's used to basically flag up alternatives of Worf scenes throughout the parallel universes, right? So he, you know, he jumps around. He sees that, you know, he wins in one universe, he loses in the other. He gets promoted. He has a family life. He has kids, and so and they show you, you know, the different alternatives that are out there. Now, the natural question is, okay, when you're saying that he has a family life, then who are you going to have as a wife? Now, it's unlikely that he's going to be married to Crusher, right? I mean, that seems to be a bit odd. And I, you know, given that him and Troy were having conversations and were having chats, I thought it was almost the best character. You know, you're not going to bring in a Worf wife character separately. So given everyone on the crew that you have and the fact there are only two of them are female, I thought it's better that it's Troy rather than that it's Crusher, because at least then you can do a couple of these stories, right?
Right.
Or those jokes about, you know, her coming into the room and stuff like that.
Because it could have been Ensign Ro, and in an alternate reality, we also could have had Kalar back. That would have been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but you're not paying for Kalar to come back, and you're not paying for Ro to come back either.
Well, I'm not paying for anybody, so I...
Well, they paid for Will. They paid for Will Wheaton to come back.
Oh, how expensive do you think Will Wheaton was at this point in his career?
I don't know, but I liked him in this episode, before seasons 1 through 3.
So if you then just consider the Troy Worf thing to be in this episode only, the only other thing that mentioned it, as far as I remember, is the opener to All Good Things, right? It is literally exactly. The teaser.
Yes, and that's why they foreshadowed it here. 15 episodes before the finale, so that Riker and Worf would have a means of conflict in the future, 25 years from then, in the alternate reality.
And that's the thing. So the Worf Riker, sorry, the Worf Troy thing is only used as a way of setting up a what if scenario in this episode and a conflict in a future scenario. So
yeah,
what I'm saying is that it's not exactly. We're not exactly dedicating half the season to watch this love triangle play out, right? It's very limited in its scope. And by the time Worf's on Deep Space Nine, in fact, I think by the time Generations comes around, we hear nothing about this relationship.
Yeah, no, this it's totally over.
Part, and it's over.
Yeah.
As a result, I don't have the time to hate this relationship, because it's not really present.
Yeah, no, it's more like, I hope they're not going there for the last half of the season, and then you forget about it when the next episode comes on, and it's pew, 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 pew.
Mm. Okay, but having said I didn't like it in All Good Things, for some reason, I seem to appreciate it this time.
Yeah, it was cute.
It was cute, and
tied it all together.
Right, and the fact that, you know, the look on her face when she realizes there's a universe out there that he comes from, where they're not in love. I mean, it was almost
shocking.
No, it was sad, because she actually thought her Worf may not ever return.
Yeah, no, I think that's something else that's slightly unfair, right? Because our Worf went around and he you know, for want of a better word, he quantum leaped into other people's bodies.
Yes.
What on earth happened to those guys afterwards? You know, is our Worf leading a trail of destruction as you know, corpses of ex-Worfs land on the floor?
Well, that's a funny thought, but the way I think about it, when he re-goes through the quantum fissure and does the subspace inversion, he goes back in time and everything gets reset and nobody knows anything and life just carries on, and poor Captain Riker in the Borg universe, oh my goodness.
Yeah. What happened? Okay, so they exploded But when the realities were reset, do you believe they were still dead or they're back?
They're back.
Oh, poor guys. Death for them would have been a lot better.
Well, let's go.
Okay, let's do this. And Doc, you're going to have to try and keep up with me because I'm having trouble even visualizing this in my brain.
Okay, come on. But
I'm going to write this down. Prime Worf is Worf 1, right? He goes to the second universe. Where did that... yellow cake.
Chocolate cake.
It was yellow.
Chocolate cake is the first change.
Yes, it's chocolate cake.
Yellow cake is the third.
Yeah,
Hang on. I find it really odd that he refers to it as yellow cake. It's sponge cake. Do you guys on the other side of the Atlantic consider this thing to be, quote, yellow cake? It's sponge cake.
Yes, yellow cake, white cake, chocolate cake.
I would probably just call it vanilla cake.
But you guys refer to it as yellow cake?
Yeah.
We wouldn't call it sponge cake, not over here.
Uh-uh. So you'd go to a shop and you'd find something that looks like that and say, can I have the yellow cake?
No, because I would only ever order chocolate.
Yeah.
I mean, my mind's been blown here. I thought this was like really shoddy writing. I almost walked up to Brandon Braga and said, can you please take out that yellow cake reference? Who the hell says yellow cake?
Can you refilm it, please? Put it in the extra, extra, extra deleted comment, please. Okay. Worf number one.
Blimey, I've Googled this, and you're right. You guys call it yellow cake.
Wow. Blimey. Okay, blimey. Now, I don't know what that means. But, is that like crikey? Blimey, yeah. Crikey.
By the way, yellow cake is also a source of uranium. So you probably shouldn't be Googling at least that much in England.
You better stop what you're doing. Uh-oh. We're gonna interrupt this show here for you. James, there's somebody at the door for you. Anyway, okay, let's just assume the first time Worf goes in his quarters when the cake turns from chocolate to sponge cake. Now, do you think he swaps universes with that Worf?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because it's our Worf from the past 7 seasons. He's just micro hopping interdimensionally from one universe to another.
Okay. Then every time he goes to the next one, does the previous Worf follow him? I mean, is there how many was it that Crusher said 250,000 hails? So let's assume.
It could be his consciousness jumps from Worf to Worf, not his body.
Okay, 285,000 hails. So I'm assuming there's 285,000 realities. Is every one of those Worfs jumping at the same time? Or just his own?
Only when our Worf goes into a different thing. So like maybe 10 or 15 different Enterprise realities.
Well, if that's the case...
Because it is not a mind to jump. It is actual body jump because he's got the quantum singularity of the original Enterprise universe. So, so he's definitely leaping, but nobody's seeing it happen.
Okay. Why isn't there a second?
Right? Because they find out that him at an RNA level, even down to the quantum level, has the alternative quantum signature. So he himself has to be from another universe, like physically. But then the question becomes, if when he jumps, he changes clothes.
And he jumps, he jumps into the other Worf's body, and that Worf that he's now inhabiting jumps to the previous wherever he was.
Okay, I'm not convinced that that's true. And the evidence that I'm going to put on the table here is that there was, when we see our Captain Picard and our Riker and our Worf on the view screen at the end.
At the end, there's a Worf there, yeah.
There's a Worf there, which means at least... they're not left Worf-less, heaven forbid. But then it also appears that that guy isn't particularly confused. Now, he might have just, he also might be aware of the jumps and stuff, but it felt almost like that guy was not aware. He also seemed like a copy of the original Worf.
Yeah, it's not explained, so we don't know. So it's up to our imaginations 25 years later to figure this out.
Well, because I was going to ask the question if the Worfs aren't exactly exchanging each other, but he's just going from one reality to another. Why isn't there a second Worf from that universe, and who are you?
Well, because it, then they'd have to make it a two-parter, and they'd have to do split screen, and it's just too much. So we'll just do some hand-waving and not worry about that part of it.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's what I was thinking. On the one hand, it could be just each time he goes to another reality, that reality switches to his reality. And because, like you said, why isn't the Worf that comes on the screen just as confused as ours is? You could see him running back and forth in tactical, so he apparently is working his job. He knows what he's doing. So every time he went to that one went to his, and then he goes back or goes on to the second one, and that second one goes back to where he belongs. It's the only thing I could come up with. That makes sense?
I say we don't worry about it, and we move right along.
Oh, okay. There's not more to move along to.
We'll never figure this out.
Yeah. Okay. So after there was, I could have much.
Is this the point where I should probably make it clear to the listener that I'm really not a big fan of the many worlds interpretations of quantum mechanics?
You're not?
No, I think it's nonsense.
Hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, just to be clear, just in case I'm like, James has gone mad. This entire universe, this entire episode is supposed to be, it's written from the perspective that, you know, quantum mechanics, because quantum mechanics is probabilistic in nature, and the macroscopic world isn't, there's a question of, like, well, how do you transition between things that it's not just that you can't measure with certainty, it's that they are inherently random. So how do you go from something that's inherently random at a quantum level to something that clearly isn't at a macroscopic level? And there are lots of things that just don't, you know, that quantum mechanics would predict that just don't happen, because there has to be some kind of a collapse of the probability distribution into the into the actual reality in the world. And and the question is like, well, how do you interpret that? What's that leap? And there are various things that are proposed, the Copenhagen principle being probably the most famous, which is the idea of the observer collapses the wave function. And by wave function, I mean probability distribution of the quantum particles. But another one that is, I think, gets too much airtime is this idea of many worlds, so many universes. So the idea is that everything that can happen does happen. You just happen to find your path through as the events occur, the universe bifurcates, an infinite number of times at every single point in time, which is what they're really trying to get at with Worf here. So the alternative choices push him into a new quantum parallel universe. But I don't think that that's reasonable. I think that when you have to stretch to there's an infinite number of universes in order to explain some mathematical formula, I just don't. And also it's unverifiable, which is, there's a debate of whether it's unverifiable or not, but at the moment it's looking like it's very much unverifiable. I'm not the biggest fan on this front.
Well, it would be hard to verify the alternate universe.
Well, I mean, if we had what data was saying, like some type of quantum signature that everything vibrates at, then I suppose you could probably tell, but you would need to have at least two of them, right? You'd need to have your own and the one from somewhere else.
Like a mirror universe, perhaps. We know they have a different quantum vibration frequency.
Should they, though?
I'm not a scientist. I don't know. The only thing I know, and at the age of 17 when I was watching this thing, other than Mirror Mirror from the original Star Trek, I don't think I'd ever contemplated alternate realities. And when this episode came out, it gave me goosebumps and chills. It blew my mind open. And especially in that one scene where Data's in the briefing room and he says, okay, so this is what happens. His shuttle hits this wall and now, pew, 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 here is all the different realities and all the things that happened. And I thought to myself, holy crap, is this even possible? It just gave me a whole new way of thinking. And the TV show Sliders wouldn't come out for another 2 years. So it was just, wow. I'm 17 years old and I'm having my brain peeled apart into new perspectives. So that's why this is my favorite.
Okay, so James, are you trying to tell me that there's not an alternate universe where I'm some kind of good-looking stallion?
I don't think we have. I don't think science has progressed to the point where we can say anything conclusive.
I like to think somewhere there's a better-looking, handsome guy than me that looks just like me.
2 inches taller with more hair.
Yeah, much. Yes. Well, 2 inches of something. But, okay. So, in one of the realities, Picard is gone. Killed at the Battle of Wolf 359, and Riker has been made captain. What? I mean, do we assume that when Riker said fire, it actually worked on one of those universes?
Yes. And I like it when Riker there says, it's good to see you again, Captain.
Oh, I love that.
And the Captain turns his face and looks at the other Riker and just has his back to the other Riker.
Right. Right.
totally ignoring him. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, buddy. I see you every day.
Right.
They also do this thing when Riker turns up on screen. So when Riker hails our Enterprise, and then Riker kind of looks at the Riker on screen and then looks at Worf and he goes, what the hell's going on here? He does this really weird double take that I don't think is warranted. He really overplays it in the background. And, you know, Picard's in front of him and Picard's the guy talking. But you see our Riker, you know, not being particularly subtle about, I don't know what it is, like, holy moly, Worf's got a red uniform. Or whatever it is that he's picking up on as being the difference between universes.
It might be he had to do exaggerated movements because he's on a view screen, and so he's far away.
Yeah, well, it doesn't, it, you know, to be clear, it doesn't really, you know, upset me or cause any distress. But
you haven't slept in decades because of this.
Yeah, but I do notice that he's like slightly over the top.
Yeah, a little bit.
I suppose. But you know what Picard is thinking. Captain Riker, what happened to me? So he knows there's a universe where he's not there.
But he must have been... He's been offered like an admiralty, right, position? He was even offered one in season one. So he's probably thinking, I took that admiral position at Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, and there's also a universe where Riker is captain of the Hood, wasn't it?
Maybe.
Yeah. Or the Ares?
So here's the thing. So let's say you are Picard and then you come across another Enterprise from another universe and you see that it's not Captain Picard. What do you immediately think? Do you think, wow, I got out and I became an admiral? Or do you think, oh, the Borg got me? Or do you think, you know, I didn't quite survive that last holiday with Vash? You know, what are things going through your mind?
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I was wondering, what if one of them answered and Picard was the size of Kempak.
Well, actually, the fact that all of these guys are identical is...
No. Borg Riker had a huge beard. He was very unkempt.
Very much.
And however, his view screen wasn't very good either.
Yeah, except for Thomas Riker was almost a mirror copy. They progressed with the beard and the whole goatee thing all at the same time. I didn't like that.
It's the same person. Of course, he's going to decide on the same style as himself.
He's on that whatever he was for 13 years or however many years it was. He actually thought about growing out a beard.
Sure.
Okay. So here's the thing, Lou. And I think they do this well at the beginning. Is that when they talk about being shifting across quantum universes? I always interpret it is that they go to something, you know, a bifurcation that has occurred very recently. So the idea of him going through the shuttle and him just knocking into another universe probably knocks him into, you know, at that time, Troy and Riker were probably having the conversation about the party, the surprise party. And in one, you know, she manages to convince him and in one he doesn't. So these universes are quite close together and the thing that changed was very, you know, much local in time.
Very subtle.
And then the next thing that changes, you get knocked out of whoever's choice it was for cake or whatever it might have been. But later on, as it goes on further and further, right, you do start seeing them being pushed into universes where decisions far in the past would have been made. So whether that's the relationship that they had between Worf and Troi, or whether it's how Worf 359 ended up, or whatever it happens to be.
Oh, so, don't forget their children.
And, well, I mean, their children, I mean, she's... I don't know if I should... She's looking surprisingly well for someone that's got two children, that's 3 and 2, is what I'd say there. That's a quick turnaround. That's really 20, quite harsh.
24th century healthcare is amazing.
Well, also, what's the gestation period, I suppose, on a Betazoid slash Worf slash Klingon? You know, it might not be... You know, turning around like a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, that's pretty harsh, right?
Especially when she gets double-donged by the two dicks, right? So that's gotta take some...
Did I hear that right?
Everybody have to explain.
Everybody knows Klingons have two penises.
Everybody knows.
Have you guys not been watching Star Trek Discovery?
Actually, honestly, I haven't. It's a couple episodes into the 32nd season or something. I've been losing it for it.
It's at the end of season one where we're on the Klingon homeworld and we see a Klingon going pee and there's two streams. So now the thing is, all over the internet, everywhere, memes to... it's too much, but it's every second meme on a Star Trek Facebook group is about the Klingons and the two penises.
Holy moly.
Lou, did you not... what? You call yourself a fan?
You know, that part missed me. I'll be honest with you. I guess I just never... I mean, they got... Well, okay. So redundant they got a backup targets. Organs. Why don't they have four arms and four eyes and two noses? And
did you not see the chase? That's not how that works. It's the internal body structure that's different.
Oh, that is fascinating. I know. No wonder why she likes them so much. Oh. Yeah,
we just don't know if they're side by side or one's on top of the other. Is one smaller than the other? How does it work? We don't know, but that's a whole thing that's going around the Star Trek Facebook sphere right now.
That borders on ridiculous, to be honest with you. I could see the two redundant organs, but no, I don't see Jadzia Dax enjoying two at the same time.
Oh, Jadzia would love it. She'd probably want 3 or 4.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. I have to agree with Sean on that.
No, yeah, you're right.
Very rarely has there been a more false statement than what you said, Lou.
Jesus, I don't think I want to sleep tonight thinking of two Klingon penises. Bastards. Lucky. Anyway. Oh, boy. Okay, so you're saying in no matter what universe you're in, Klingons are well hung.
Apparently.
Good. Good. Good for them. Somebody has to. All right. Wow. Where am I? I have no idea where we are anymore.
Did you get derailed?
Oh, totally. I'm totally lost. All I know is that they have to figure out his quantum signature, and they find it. Like you said, Riker talking to Picard, you know, I liked it. I found it rather touching, you know. It's good to see you again. It's been a long time. So, although for Picard, like I said, he had to be thinking, oh, God, what happened to me over there?
In this episode, though, it did seem like Picard was kind of phoning in his performance. He wasn't his regular self. It was just something slightly off about his acting. Especially when he was eating the cake. That was really jarring. And there was just a few other random scenes where he didn't seem like himself.
Well, he wasn't supposed to be there. He was needed on the bridge.
Uh-huh. I know.
Why? What was going on the bridge? The captain can't run to a turbo lift and pop his head in and say, hey, Worf, yeah, good, happy birthday. I got to go. But he did. That's the whole purpose. I mean, He was a little busy. He sends his, birthday wishes, and poof, there he is.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, yeah, that makes sense. So after they're receiving 285,000 hails, Riker thrusts his crotch onto Data's face again to determine where Worf's reality is. And today, in fact, I got an alert from YouTube. There is a YouTube page, or whatever it's called. It's called Trek Culture.
Yep. I watch it all the time on YouTube.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And just today, it came... Whatever you just said, I don't know. And just today, it had a picture of Riker's leg on the con and has a arrow to his crotch. But I didn't read it, but obviously, I'm looking forward to watching that video about... I don't remember what it was. I'd have to look it up.
Luke, the arrow is at his hand and his knee, not at his crotch.
Well, it's close enough. I mean, you figure Riker's probably well endowed too, just doesn't have two of them. I can't get over that.
Oh, I can't get over the fact you didn't know about this.
Oh, that boggles my mind. I mean, you know, we don't have an episode of Alexander saying, "Father, why do we have to..."
Oh, did you miss that episode?
I missed it totally. You know, that's why that's why Alexander got in trouble in school. He was teasing the one penis children. Oh, stop, Lou. All right, let's go back to this. let's see. So Riker does fire on that Enterprise that doesn't want to go back. You know, this. Send a, give him a quick jolt, but it destroys him instead. Oh, that's sad to think that they have to go back to where they came from. Okay, so the quantum signature from Worf is found, and they send their shuttlecraft Kiri. Worf starts to go back, but of course is fired on that Enterprise that I immediately just said gets destroyed. And, all's good, I guess.
Yep, that's pretty much the episode.
Mm-hmm.
If that's where you're heading.
That's where I was heading.
But we learn that anything that can happen will happen and does happen in alternate quantum states. And like I said, it blew my 17-year-old brain apart. And that's why it's my favorite.
Okay.
A whole new way of thinking.
All right. So... we're back to the shuttle. He's back to champion standing. Riker escorts him to his quarters again. And he tries to bust the people who are waiting around the corner. But, of course, nobody was there except for Deanna. And, again, he had that look on his face when she's... what did she say? Surprise or happy birthday or something? He's like, But then he tells her to stay. You know, you don't have to leave. Why don't we get some dinner together? And really? What does he do? Champagne. So do you think... Okay, I'm having a hard time thinking of Deanna in the Prime Universe being attracted to Worf.
Why?
Don't know. Just the same reason why them getting together, no good things, didn't feel right. I don't know why. I don't think she would be attracted to the...
They're not showing her as attractive to him, right? And actually, one thing that I do like is that when they talk about when our Worf talks to the wife, Deanna, he does say clearly that, look, although I've never considered this to be a possibility, so it's very clear that we're not expected to find this idea that Worf has been, you know, has been secretly in love with Troy, and I think that's certainly correct. I think that this is just I think, you know, I read the final scene as Worf, you know, potentially just reaching out to see what happens. I don't think that Troy is particularly you know, going into this without anything other than just friendship at this stage. and we'll see where it develops. It obviously takes him long enough, right, to get Troy onto the holodeck and all good things.
Yeah. So you think he just got the notion, he got the idea from this universe and thought, hey, you know, something that might be a good idea?
He might as well have a nice evening, right? Why not?
He's been through a lot.
Yeah, but I didn't get it as he's just having a nice evening with a fellow colleague because he, you know, he could have invited anybody. But the fact that, hey, she is attracted to me in one universe, I kind of liked it. Well, let's see what I can accomplish here in this universe.
Well, I assume he's thinking there must be something, you know, it is at least a possibility, right, that this might work. And I think that he sees it as nothing more than that. By the way, I forgot to mention that there's a great bit of data dialogue in this episode where he mentions that he wasn't exactly sure at the precise moment and where they consummated their relationship.
Yes. Yes, I wanted to mention that too. That was awesome. I can investigate if you like.
How would he do that? What would that be like?
Could you?
That's the second part of the episode.
Right, but how would he do that? How would he investigate that? His movements, you know, all the times that he went to Deanna's quarters or something. How would he go to Deanna and say, I've been asked to investigate the first time you and Worf had sex?
Yeah, I mean, the sensors record a lot of stuff, I'm sure.
I bet. Yeah. Worf's heart rate went up. Deanna's at the same exact moment. The vibration is... Huh? The vibrations of two penises.
There was a 3-degree increase in ambient room temperature on such and such an occasion.
That must have been when it was done.
Yeah, but actually they do keep track of life signs, do they not? So they must know your blood pressure and your heart rate. And, you know, you could probably infer quite a bit from that.
I'm not sure about that.
Just check the video logs because everything's filmed. There's so much infinite storage space that everybody has cameras in the rooms at all times, right?
Yeah. No. Or maybe better, just ask the ask his neighbor when the dent appeared in the wall.
There you go.
I'm not so sure they would have active life sign thing, or else yet, you know, the murder on Voyager would have been detected before somebody noticed it.
Yeah, there really is a severe lack of cameras and recording devices on starships. It makes no sense.
Definitely. Just like bank cameras, you know, they're recorded on potatoes.
Yeah.
So, anyway. All right, then. I guess that's pretty much it. Everything's good and the new relationship has begun.
Yay.
All right. Well, then I guess it's now time for our final thoughts and ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Sean?
Well, obviously it's the best. Sure, there's some ridiculous stuff happens and stuff that doesn't exactly make sense, but if you just hand wave it away, it's okay. It gives us a new concept for our minds to follow, the idea of alternate realities and being able to transverse those realities and actually see what your life could have been like if you had made the other decision. That's a whole can of worms that you could just think about for years and years. So obviously I love this episode and I'm going to give it 25 out of 5.
25. Okay. All righty. Let's see here. James, you want me to go first? Okay. Brennan is a genius, as I said. This was a damn convoluted and really. It was at some points it was hard to keep up with the changes, but after you look at it a couple of times, it's easier to find. The fact that things are changing before our eyes was amazing. With only a few camera tricks to change the reality, at some point the reality changed from behind the camera's back, and that's why the cake changed from chocolate to sponge cake, was that? Yeah, sponge cake. Other than that, they had to push into the face and then come back out to reveal the change. Well, they probably couldn't have done it any other way, so that's forgiving.
But still, I love seeing the screen full of Enterprises just popping in one by one. And even a shuttlecraft full of Worfs just walking around there. We didn't even discuss those two aspects, really. Those are pretty good. Although I do find Worf and Deanna's relationship in All Good Things quite unnatural. In this, for some reason, it works for me because I like their chemistry. And I like the fact that when she realizes there's a reality without him, she's quite sad about that. So I kind of like that. Michael Dorn did a remarkable job with the alternate realities, even rolling his eyes at the right times as he can't believe what's happening. And this is crazy. Let's see. I would have liked to have seen a little more emotion over the death of Geordi.
Yeah, agree.
That's one thing we didn't get because Worf, his inaction caused the death of Geordi. Maybe not.
And in a two-part episode, we would have, but we're constrained by the 42 minutes. So if this episode was made now, it would have way more detail.
Yes, absolutely. On the other hand, as I said, you know, I would have liked to have more emotion, at least by the crew, if not by Worf. Because in Worf, he died a warrior. He's now in Stovakor, or whatever the human heaven that Worf would believe. Would we agree that Geordi would be in Stovakor or in heaven? He died at his post during a battle. It's an honorable death, right?
It is. Look, and Geordi's been lost before in on duty, and Worf really didn't care at that point either.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, he didn't growl at the ceiling that time, but still, yeah, I like this scene. Because, you know, Geordi's warming up on me. Before, he was kind of a bad boss, but now he's been warming to me lately. Let's see here. What else? It's a very convoluted story. It's trying to find the little clues of changes. I like trying to look every time there was a change. I really started to look to see what would be different, and it would absolutely drive me nuts because that painting is now different. Oh wait, it's over there now. Wait, it switched back over here now.
Speaking of the painting, the funny thing was I knew it had changed, but I thought it changed into like a watercolor of the Enterprise, not a Klingon battlecruiser. So my memory was totally messed up.
Okay.
But I've seen this like a dozen times. But
yeah. Well, there are a lot of things I've never seen until now. And just the idea that I heard contestants and contenders, I can't believe I even detected that. But I didn't know if that was a writing glitch or if that was intentional. But like you guys said, the writing on this was so good that I believe that it was all intentional. And if we were to try and figure out where's Waldo in this episode, I think we'd have a hell of a time detecting all those changes that they put in. So it'd be funny.
Mm-hmm.
It was very nice to see a Lieutenant Crusher.
Oh, definitely.
I've bagged on Will Wheaton. Brian Detamore and I don't remember if Brian Baker wasn't in it, but Brian Detamore and I have done an episode on the ways to kill Wesley Crusher. And we came up with a whole bunch of ways to kill Wesley Crusher. So if you guys haven't heard that, go back to lewtrekshow.com, look for a simplified show list, and you'll see a whole smattering list of the episodes where you can even, you know, right-click and download to listen. But that's something we did, and it was kind of fun. And I made sure I was very clear. I like Will Wheaton. I like Will Wheaton a lot as an actor. But I always had problems with Wesley Crusher. But here, I loved it. I loved him. He just came out of nowhere. And I completely forgot he was here in this episode. And he was confident. He didn't have this scared little ensign on the bridge thing going. It was awesome. It seems strange that we didn't see Alexander at his dad's birthday party, but the kid was probably unavailable, and therefore Alexander was on Earth. And I also would have liked to seen the two children, 2 and 3, running out of their bedroom to meet Daddy.
Yeah, but with all the CGI for the Enterprises, they had to save money somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. No sniveling little kids on the screen this time. A lot of people don't like children in Star Trek. I can't explain why. Oh, let's see here. I guess that pretty much is it for me. So overall, this one keeps you in suspense. It's quite gripping. It was a very fast 43 minutes. 45 minutes. And so I'm with you on this, Sean. This is a complete 5 for me, a very solid 5 for me. So I applaud Brandon Braga. There were some real synapses being used to create this, to write this out. So kudos to him. I'm at a 5.
Excellent.
And Doc, I know you're at a 5 too, so just tell us why.
Well, this is a great episode.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I mean, Lou, you had a really thorough roundup there. I don't particularly. I love this episode. I think this is good. I think it's a great romp through Trek, right? It's got everything that I like about Star Trek. It's a bit of a mystery that's going on. I like Worf in this episode, despite me not particularly being a big fan of the character. But what they show and the adventure we go on is great. And look, this kind of story doesn't get told else outside of science fiction. So, very happy to put down 5 out of 5 from me this week. This is one of the good ones, right? One of the good ones in season 7. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple of, less than stellar outings in season 7. A lot of the things that might be kind of relatively pedestrian. But this is, this is great. So, it sounds like it's like a perfect score from all three of us this week.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got 5s. His was 25, so no. So right now the guest ratings are hovering at 9.0, whereas we're in the high 2s. So
I think we're gonna have to cap the contribution from our guest this week at 5.
Wait a second.
Oh, nuts.
Hold on, just a minute. I don't think we could do that. And the reason is there was an episode back, and I don't remember what it was, but you actually had like a 10 out of something, or you gave it a crazy number, and I wrote it down, but I lost it somewhere. Anyway, yeah. I lost it. It's gone. Okay, so that's it. For a season for this one. So, Sean, thank you for coming on again. I don't see you anywhere in the future for us for this show.
Oh, no. Series. That's sad. I've been everywhere all the time.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Pretty sure I've been in every season.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't see you coming on for anything in the future here.
Oh, what do you got left?
Firstborn and Bloodlines.
I don't know either of those.
I mean, that strong passes.
Is Bloodlines the one with Future Alexander?
Hang on, isn't that... So Bloodlines and Firstborn are the two I get confused about. There's one that's about Future Alexander, and there's one that's about Picard's son, right? With the Ferengi.
Ugh, I hate that one.
And I think Firstborn is the Klingon one, and Bloodlines is the Ferengi one.
Yeah, I'm going to toss Brian Dedamorin on that one and get with him. I usually have him in for Klingon episodes, so I'll send him a message about it. Let's not forget, we would talk bad. Let's talk Sub Rosa.
You should get Robert Reyes on for that. It's his favorite.
Which one?
Sub Rosa.
I do have 2 on there for that.
I think that was mentioned ironically, though. I don't think that's...
Oh!
That's surely not a true statement.
No, it is. It is. If you ever listened to the 10 Forward podcast, it was a running theme, a joke on that show, that Robert Reyes was the guy who liked Sub Rosa. They made a whole song about it.
Yeah, but I still think it was... I don't think it was... I think it was based on an untruth.
I'm not sure.
Maybe. If he listens to this episode, if he still listens to our show, he can send us a message.
LootTruckShow@gmail.com. Other than those two, there's a couple that... now, Homeward, I do have a guest that I doubt. I seriously doubt. We haven't heard from this guy for years, so I doubt he's coming on. So that could be available.
Is that the one with Dwarf's brother?
Yeah. Yeah.
And the Eye of LaForge.
Yeah.
So these are quality shows that we're offering you.
Yes, yeah. I can tell. Since you took Darmok from me and I didn't get to be on that one, now I get the leftover garbage. Okay.
Darmok, Bloodlines, yeah, they're all the same.
Oh, yeah. They're yeah. High quality. Man.
Okay. Well, anyway, so if you think of one you've in the next few, just let me know and I'll let you know. There's a, like I said, there's a few that we have two people on. It would be way too hard to deal with the 5-person call.
Yeah, no, I don't want to get involved in that.
So other than that, just let me know. And thank you very much for coming on. And I, you know, anything that's got pizza in it, I'm going to be interested in. So I do want to hear that one.
Yes. So listeners, while we're wrapping up, make sure you check out Rusted Robot Podcast for all your weekly geekly pop culture news, Soul Forge for stupid things we do for love and other stories, and Cosmic Pizza for a little bit of everything.
Excellent. All right. So, all right, everyone, join us after you've been listening to him for a while. Join us next time. You notice that I'll say next week as we review episode number 12, The Pegasus. Everybody, take care and good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night. Okay.